CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. At the end of the first year of the Biden administration, the report card from the professor, writing at Defining Ideas, entitled Biden's New Year of Living Dangerously. Let us begin with foreign affairs, as the professor does. Not all foreign affairs will concentrate in August of 2021, the tragedy in Kabul. Professor, a very good evening to you. You identify Afghanistan as the apparent break in the public's approval of the Biden administration. How so? Did it surprise everyone that Joe Biden, after many years of speaking in two directions about Afghanistan, was leaving? Why was that a blow to his popularity? Good evening to you.
Yeah, well, it turns out the promise was one thing and the performance was another. I think it was very cynical for him to say, well, we'll leave today and they'll fall at the end of the winter, but we'll be out long enough so the blood will not be on our hands. I regard that kind of behavior as something of a disgrace. But what happened is he could not even pull off a plan like that. So he decides to pull out. He makes a number of mid-level strategic decisions, including to cut back ground support and air support and intelligence support for the local Afghan forces. He pulls out in the middle of summer when people are in the field. And so Kabul doesn't fall in 3 months. It falls in 3 days. And at that particular point, the disjunction between what he promised, an orderly withdrawal, and what we got was so conspicuous that you can't figure out how to excuse it. So he gets up there, and instead of saying, I made a mistake and I have to rethink this in future, he announces that the withdrawal was a success. Now, then you start to think about what's going to happen to the people who are left behind. You have people like Nancy Pelosi saying, I hope the Taliban is going to be respectful of women's rights. And dream on, Ms. Pelosi. They're not going to do that. And then you have to worry about whether or not the Taliban, which has never run anything as a government, is going to be able to put into place all the things that will be necessary for individuals in that poor country to survive a rather frosty winter. It appears as though they have not done that. And since the United States and the other allies have pulled out, they're left to their own devices, and it looks as though there'll be a very cold winter with mass starvation, famines, and so forth. How could you possibly justify that? Well, everybody who looks at this, what's going to happen? Some people say, well, the great strategic mass that Joe Biden pulled out, that means he's husbanding his resources so he could fight China in other arenas. But remember, you were talking about an American force of around 2,500 people. You take all of them out, it's not going to make a material difference to the rest of the world. And so if you're sitting there as Mr. Putin or as Mr. Xi, you're going to say, I've got myself an easy mark here. He constantly promises things that he can't deliver on. And then when it comes to the question of execution, he meddles in such a way that makes it impossible for his own military to do anything. And so to the public, looking at what happens in this particular case, what they see is a genuine calamity, exposing itself in slow time, watching the whole thing happen right in front of their eye, and he's trying to figure out how it is he keeps their loyalty. Well, most of the people who voted for Biden thought that he was a steady hand at the switch and the mercurial Trump would no longer bother us. But he's not a steady command at the switch. He has no idea of what he's doing or how he's doing it. So what you then do is see another problem, which is absolutely endemic to weak leaders. It's just the simple question, who's in charge? It could be Biden, at which point it's complete ineptitude, or it could be somebody else, at which point the delegation is inexcusable. So no matter which way you try to slice this situation, it's going to basically destroy the confidence that the American people have in their government to deal and to negotiate the world affairs. So it's going to be shown very quickly in Iran. It's going to be shown in the Ukraine. It's going to be shown in Israel and Palestine. It's going to be shown with respect to the Chinese. You're going to start to see people like Japan getting very, very nervous. So what's the new priority in foreign affairs? It's the question of how other nations that fear China and Russia, and rightly so, can form alliances without us, with strange bedfellows, as it were, in order to deal with them. If you have a president this week, nobody really believes that this president is going to commit himself and American resources to anything other than a land attack on Cape Cod. And so what happens is America has exited the world stage. It's kind of isolationism by default. As you know, John, I've always been a kind of a bellicose, that's a bit exaggeration, libertarian, thinking that if you do not make sure that you have force available, guys who perceive your weaknesses will take advantage of you. There's no love lost out there for the United States, and there's all sorts of people who are much more determined to advance their narrow agendas than we are. What we've done is to manage to subsidize our opponents and to embarrass our friends. So I think that's what accounts for the 10 points in the drop that took place shortly after the Afghan administration thing. It's the worst debacle in foreign affairs. It's far worse than even the mess that took place in 1975 when the United States tried to withdraw from Vietnam.
Energy. This is a story that will be with us for decades, as the Afghanistan story will be with us. But the immediate headlines are important because you anticipated energy as a major factor, given the administration in the first day, I believe, made energy part of the conversation. And that was a pipeline story. But this is about energy globally. We know that energy in the United States has jumped. Everybody can see that at a gas pump. And Mr. Biden's attempt to answer the critics was to open up Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Is energy a story that Mr. Biden invented, promised, can solve? Because he mostly talks about climate change.
Well, he basically is exaggerating, slightly hysterical on climate change, and thinks that the kinds of things that he do will solve climate problems, whereas they will create surely massive shortages in the distribution and production of energy. It's not clear that they will move global warming over the next several years by anything more than a thousandth of a degree. So he has no sense of proportion on the relative situation. But he's not alone. Just the other day, Mayor de Blasio in New York City said, "I'm going to make sure that no new housing will use natural gas, even though it's much safer than coal and much more reliable than solar and wind energy." So he's demonized the two of those things. And once you do that, in effect, you then are going to be forced back to the wind and solar. Production is going to be very erratic with these devices. People have said since the beginning of this entire debate, solar energy isn't very good when the sun doesn't shine, and wind energy isn't very good when the wind doesn't blow. And if it turns out that you have to gather the energy at places far removed from urban centers, you have transmission problems, which will knock your socks off because you won't be able to get what you need from where it is to where it's going. And what he's doing, and what many states like California are doing, are doubling down on losing technologies, and they hope that this is going to change something with respect to global warming. The last report I've read on global warming just this morning was that there were record colds on both the North and South Poles that have taken place this particular winter, many degrees below before. And so let me just explain what I think is the simplest way to understand this. The whole question about global warming and global cooling, it's not just simply going up. This has always been a cyclical kind of phenomenon. It gets warmer, it gets colder. You look at hurricanes, they get high frequency, then they get low frequency. To think that somehow or other these cyclical patterns could be explained by the monotonic uniform rise of carbon dioxide is fantasy. There's got to be a lot more going on in these cases, and we don't know what those things are. But what we're doing is we're trying to push on the wrong buttons, and what happens is we can be sure this is going to have devastating consequences with respect to the supply of energy. So what should be done? One should return much more to the Trump policies. You have to start encouraging the export of gas of one kind or another, and you have to therefore encourage its production. You have to make sure that this stuff goes into Europe so that you don't have the problem of the Russians controlling everything in terms of the supply. And if you open up that stuff, you change the geopolitics enormously. What harm are you going to do to global warming? I think the answer is going to be trivial and non-existent, because I think much of this stuff turns out to be just overstated. If you look at a series of events, and you've got 10 of them, there's always going to be one that's going to be terrible, and the other 9 may be fine. But if what you do is report the bad one and ignore the good developments, you're going to give the public a completely misguided impression of the way in which the system is going to be working. So in one sentence, Guy's unholy sort of irrational fear of a climate increase has led to him to clamp down on energy. It turns out that when you combine that with everything that's happening elsewhere, like in Germany, it's the same thing. The Germans, you recall, are trying to phase out your nuclear energy. They're trying to make solar and wind primary. It simply does not work to take variable sources and to make them your energy base. So they have a lot to blame on their own, as do we. But essentially what you have to do is to understand that the best road to energy sufficiency and climactic change is to constantly improve the use that you can make of fossil fuels rather than trying to go off to something which is brand new and wholly unreliable.
Speaking with Richard Epstein, Professor Richard Epstein, Senior Fellow of the Hoover Institution, a report card for the Biden administration's first year. When we come back, inflation. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.